If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got exciting news. I'm hosting a special event for recruitment business owners in London on September 17th and 18th, and I'd love you to join us. If you want to achieve your full potential, you need to surround yourself with the right people. At the Recruitment Coach Live Summit, you'll get to meet some of my podcast guests in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed on the show will either be attending or speaking at the summit. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit. You've heard of the concept of having a mastermind group, right? This concept was popularized by Napoleon Hill, the author of Think and Grow Rich. It was based on his interviews with people like Andrew Carnegie and Thomas Edison. The purpose of a mastermind group is to meet with a small group of like-minded people to support, encourage, and learn from each other's experience and share knowledge to accelerate the attainment of your goals. If that concept makes sense to you, then join us at the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in Florida on 9th and 10th of October. You'll have multiple opportunities to learn from other successful business owners during breakout sessions and the roundtable discussions. For full information and to register, visit recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today I'm thrilled to be joined by one of our clients, Troy Ashby. Troy is the president of Benchmark Search Group in Dallas. He founded the company in 2018 after working at one of the big four accounting firms, in addition to more than a decade working with one of the nation's largest recruiting firms. Troy has built Benchmark's reputation as a trusted advisor for sourcing and recommending the right accounting talent, specializing in direct hire placement, executive search, and temporary staffing for accounting and finance professionals. Troy places a strong emphasis on family, which is why he built a great internal culture for his employees, centered around a workplace that's been designated as the best place to work for working parents multiple years in a row. Troy, welcome. I'm glad we're finally doing this.
I know, me too. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Absolutely. So could you tell the story of how you first got into recruiting?
Sure. So after I got my accounting degree and went and slaved away in Big Four, I realized that it probably wasn't going to be my future. And I started looking for an accounting career. I happened to connect with a few recruiters and went out and got a bunch of interviews, got a few offers, and realized maybe accounting is the problem, not public accounting. And so one of the recruiters flipped a script on me, said, "What about this?" Started exploring, and that's how it all started. I said yes, and let's go.
Fantastic. What was it about account? I mean, obviously, you're still connected to accounting. You're a CPA. What was it about the actual work that you found you were better situated in a recruiting role?
Accounting people are still my people. I mean, you put me in a room, and I wouldn't know what their degree is or their career is, and for some reason, we'll always find each other. So what I found about myself is it wasn't the actual job, because I think accounting is interesting. I still think it's interesting. But part of my DNA, my parents were small business owners. And so I watched the harder they worked, the more they got rewarded in income. And so I started thinking maybe sales is more the path. I'm working, it didn't matter how much I was working. I was only making $1,000 or $2,000 more than my peers. And so I was just looking for something that was like owning a business, but something kind of in sales. And so when the recruiting opportunity came up, I had no idea what that was. But when they said that you get paid for performance, it sounded amazing.
All right. That makes total sense to me. I think we're wired the same way in that respect. So then and did it live up to your expectations? How did you like it?
Man, I had never felt or had so much failure, thrown at me. It felt like everything I had done before that, I figured out it was all success. So failure after failure after failure, almost fired in my first 90 days. And they gave me an extra,
really?
They gave me an extra 30 days because my pipeline was strong. And the first 6 or 9 months was tough, but it was really getting over that hurdle and that achiever mentality. I refused to fail, although I kept saying, I'm going to put a year in and I'm going to use this sales experience to go do something else. And then I stayed at that firm for 13 years.
Wow. So That's interesting, because when I first started recruiting, I hated it. And I thought, what? Like, this is, I don't know. It was so much harder than I was expecting it to be. And I think you're right. Like, getting through the first month and then 3 months, and then like eventually it kind of starts clicking together. But tell me about your first 90 days then. Why, you said you almost got fired. There must be a story there.
You know, the accounting in me was the problem. I was so meticulous. I was so organized that I couldn't do enough activity because I was so worried about keeping track of everything. And I almost had to break the cycle instead of researching before the call, just wing it a little bit. But that wasn't me. And so, I had a really good mentor. His name is Richard Neary. We still keep up here and there. And he basically said, look, if you were to make 10,000 phone calls, because back then it's all phone calls and research, but if you make 10,000 phone calls in a year, you cannot fail. Go find out how many you've made. And so I went and looked it up and realized I was behind. And then I started thinking, oh, that now I have a different target. Instead of all these KPIs, I have calls. And so I just hit the gas and I figured out how fast can I get 10,000 phone calls in 9 months. So the cool part to that story is, yes, I didn't have any deals in my first 90 days. I had 3 or 4 in my fourth month when they let me stay on. And then I was one deal away from rookie of the year at one of the largest national recruiting firms in the country.
Wow. That's an incredible turnaround. So I think what's great about that story, Troy, is now you're in the owner's, like, leader's seat, right? And I find when people are growing their firm, getting people from, you know, joining and maybe they have some or no recruiting experience to getting them up and running and successful, from a owner's point of view, that's a very exciting and rewarding thing to accomplish. It's to teach what you know and mentor somebody and help them to get up and running. But on the other hand, it can also be a roller coaster. It can be frustrating, especially if someone is taking longer to really get it than you would like, because of course you're burning cash in the meantime and you're spending a lot of time and energy, you know, coaching somebody. So, but it can be useful to remember that, you know, this is a process, and it can take a little longer for things to click in. So I guess the difference with you then, you put on the gas and you increased your activity. And so your manager presumably could see you were doing the right things, you know, and that sooner or later it was gonna take off. Maybe we'll return to this in a bit, but I'd love to hear more about benchmark search, because 2018 you started the business and you've won this award for best place to work for working parents. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. So family is our first core value. The mantra we always talk about. And, you know, when I set out to start Benchmark, I knew it wasn't just going to be me. And it was also partially like I wanted to spend more time with my family. So I've set this thing up where I don't want people to miss a recital, a baseball game, a parent-teacher meeting, tons of flexibility around that. You still have a job to do, but we give trust first. It's not earned. And you know, I don't want them to feel tied to a desk or to the phone. And so we've done, you know, several things. Like, hey, bring your kid to work if you have to come to work. It's all those little things I invested in, you know, paying for 100% of medical care, FSA for dependent care too, because dependent care when they're young costs a lot of money and it's hard to figure out like what are you going to do. And we are hybrid, so helping them with some dependent care needs with some tax write-offs there helps as well.
What's FSA? I'm not
so it's a flexible spending account. So we have that for like healthcare, but you also have it for dependent care. So it's an option, it's an add-on option. And it allows them to put money in from your bank account or from your paycheck. And it's pre-tax dollars that you get to then spend on childcare.
Got it. Okay. No, that's cool. That makes sense. So tell me more. You've got the hybrid working is very flexible. So people need to take time off for, you know, kids, school events and stuff. They can do that as, you know, you trust them to get the job done, you know. Anything else that you feel like, what the award for best place to work for working parents, what's the kind of criteria that they are judging when you're entering that?
That's really interesting. I don't know the exact behind the scenes on how they judge it. They send, you have to go through 20 or 30 questions, and they ask several different pieces of just to make sure that you've got something relevant, or at least family friendly. And then they also categorize you, like we're in the micro category, so it's anybody less than 24 people. And so then they give you a benchmark of where you stand versus the rest in that tier. And we're always on the upper echelon of that. There's one or two, and I actually can't remember what they are. There's one or two, FSA was one of them that we weren't doing. And I realized that that was something that I could add in. So by doing that award, I realized that, hey, you know what? I hadn't thought about that. Let's add that in.
Yeah. So from a business owner's perspective, I think it's definitely worthwhile putting yourself forward for these types of awards for a few reasons. Number one, of course, if you win it, then that's fantastic in terms of enhancing your ability to attract talent to come and work for you. I actually think that the awards don't mean much to clients, you know, or candidates for that matter. But as far as attracting staff, I do think it's meaningful, because even the fact that you would, you know, go out for that type of award in itself suggests that it's something that you care about and you take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And then even the process, as you say, of like the selection criteria helps you to enhance your culture and like FSA. FSA thing. Like you learned that from the process. So that's fantastic, Troy. I love that. Let's talk about the journey then. So when you first started, was it just you yourself, or did you have a team right from the get-go?
Yeah. So it was technically it was me by myself. I had a guy that I knew from previous time that did IT recruiting. So he and I got a little tiny little office and shared an office space, but it was just me doing accounting, him doing IT with different brands, different labels, but kind of had some camaraderie at the beginning. Always knew I needed to hire, and it took me about 9 months to hire the first person. But yeah, then we were off to the races.
All right, fantastic. And so how did things progress from there to kind of starting to build that core team and get some momentum?
Yeah. So hired the first person, and then probably about a year or about almost exactly a year later, it was person number two. I mean, she's still with me today. Yeah, so I was on this path of hiring one a year. And, you know, candidly, I wasn't sure how big we were going to grow it. I kind of felt like at any given time, we're going to have 8 people. I didn't have a strategy behind it necessarily, but my thing was always looking at top producers at other firms who were maybe not, you know, it was a culture misfit, or they wanted some more autonomy. They wanted to spend more time with family, but they were very successful and driven. And so that's really what I was looking for is, hey, this is a place where we're investing, you know, a lot in technology. We're trying to do things the right way. You've got everything that you'd have at a big firm, but come surround yourself with top performers. And so that's what we've all, our mantra's always been, you know, the golden handcuffs is hard. So, you know, we actually had a couple of hiccups along the road. We started hiring a little faster and realized that I didn't really have the infrastructure in place to hire as fast as I was. And so about a year ago, I kind of leveled the whole, the way that we're doing things and started from scratch and said, you know what, I've got these great, it was a team of 3 or 4 at the time, and we, great foundation, but a couple of misfires as far as hires go. And some of it was on us and some of it was on the person. And I didn't want that to happen again. And so, you know, we set up at having, you know, operating procedures and standard processes and really started things that probably should have done a long time ago. But as you start going, you're not really paying attention to it. Added some training in place. We actually finished both video kind of asynchronous and synchronous trainings. And we find ourselves today, so earlier this year, there were three of us, and we're sitting at eight today. Or it's, yeah, eight today. So, and frankly, there's scalability that has come along with that, and making sure it's not all on my plate. I think I was always kind of holding on way too hard. Am I really the expert in all these things? And how much time do I really have?
Troy, there was a lot there to unpack. So let's break that down a little bit. I know that as a member of our Apex group, one of the things that you're really focused on is, you know, building that team and scaling the business. What do you think? And it's not easy, right? Otherwise, everybody would do it. What do you think for you were the key challenges that were slowing you down?
Do I have to be honest? It was me. It was me. I was the bottleneck. Well, I felt like I had to be all things to all people. So I have a great team in place, but I still felt like everything needed to flow through me, or it just seemed that was the way it happened. I was, you know, the leader, and so what I had to do is, you know, Brittany has great strengths and Tracy has great strengths, and let's add those and kind of figure out who does what and kind of put people in place. So that was really the first thing. And then frankly, with my bandwidth, and this is actually through your program and encouragement really early on, was hiring my first virtual assistant, and it allowed all these ideas that I have that I couldn't ever get to start coming to life in a very quick way, to help us come up with operating procedures, to help us craft, like, okay, we need to do training. You know, what are the categories that we need to do that in? And so that was what the first critical piece was hiring that first VA.
Amazing. I'd love to talk more about VAs. First of all, you kind of skimmed over the idea of removing yourself as a bottleneck and learning to let go and delegate and relinquish some control. Could you talk through that? Like, is that a mindset shift, or were there practical things that you did differently? You mentioned that you harnessed the strengths of the team members you already had, but like, what can you just elaborate on that? Because I feel like this is relevant to like 95% of the people listening. Our recruiters like to be in control, right? And then you're trying to grow and you're like the main, you know, you're the face of the business. You have a lot of the key relationships and you're probably generating a disproportionate amount of the revenue. And going from that to running a team with multiple successful billers, if you want to do that, you have to be able to delegate and empower people to do the job without you getting in their way. So what was that journey for you?
Yeah, it was really out of necessity, frankly. I have this, I don't know if it's an ability or a curse, but my bandwidth, I can stretch quite a bit. And I think at some point I kind of broke that bandwidth. And so I started looking specifically to Tracy. Well, actually, she probably came to me and was like, what can I take, frankly? And it was, and then with my first VA as well, they both were sitting there saying, hey, we've got this. We've got you. We can do this. Let us take this. And so I went through an exercise, and it was probably too mundane, but it was really good for me that I kind of went through all the stuff that I was doing on a monthly basis. So I tracked it for a full 30 days. And
wow, that's your accountant.
It is. When I saw the list, even I was surprised. And then I shared it with the team, and it was pretty organic. Like, hey, I've got that. I can do this. And so we kind of started figuring that out, and it's still a work in process. There's still some things I need to get off my plate, some that maybe eventually will move. But we've got it in a really good place right now. But that exercise was the best thing I had done.
This is brilliant, Troy. Really, I want to learn more about that. Before we talk about the exercise, though, you mentioned that you have a pretty massive bandwidth, but it did break. What was that breaking point, and how did you realize? I don't have the capacity. I need to fix this.
Well, so let's go back to family for a second. Family's key to me. Family's key to my team. So I wouldn't sacrifice from the family necessarily, but I was sacrificing from sleep. And what happened is I will find a way to leave the office at 5:30 and go be with my family for 3 hours, 4 hours, do whatever we're doing. And then I would get back on. And what happened is that night started getting really, really long. And this is particularly, you know, as we're growing, as we're scaling, trying to make sure my onboarding documents are right, always have ideas of things that I could send to clients and different ways to brand ourselves. And so there's all these things, plates that were spinning. And at some point I was just looking in the mirror and I had a lot of bags under my eyes. I thought this probably isn't sustainable.
Right. 100%. Exactly. Like, yeah. Especially when you get to our age, it's, I think it's one thing when you're in your 20s and, you know, but yeah, you're right. Absolutely. So, okay. So you reached that point where you're like, and was there a moment where you're like, this has to change because I'm, you know, I can't keep going like this.
There really wasn't a big aha moment necessarily, but when we left for spring break with the family, and it was like, I'm always excited to go on spring break trips with the family, but when I realized I needed that big exhale more than maybe I mostly needed to, and when I came back and Tracy and Brittany and the team had really done. They didn't need me. I mean, they, you know, to some extent, and so that was just kind of an eye-opening moment. You've got these, you know, core folks that are here. Let's put best on best, and it doesn't need to come through me.
Awesome. All right. So actually going on that vacation with your family and realizing, you know, the business didn't burn down, everything's still ticking over, you've got talented people in place and it was fine. That maybe reassured you that, oh, okay, I need to trust more, you know, let them get on with it. So then talk to me about this exercise, because we encourage all of our clients to kind of do an exercise where you write down what are the things you're spending time on a day-to-day basis, and how many of those things do you really need to do, and how many things could be either delegated or automated. And you took that to, I don't know anybody who's done it for 30 days. Usually it's like a couple of days, then people get bored of it and they're like, okay, that's good enough. So how did you track it and what did that involve?
Well, first of all, I wish I would have had, there's a software I know about now, Clockify, that I wish I would have used that because it tracks it for you, Clockify, or anything like that. Any time tracker that will basically tell you what you're spending your time on in the screen. But it was literally just every time I did something, write it down. And it was manual. There was nothing fancy to it, but it was right in front of me constantly on a notepad. And what happened is, you know, that when I went through the exercise that Julie gave me, it was great. I came up with 40 things in a couple of days. And then a couple of days later, I was like, oh yeah, but I also do that. But I also do that. Oh, I just did this. I just did this. And then I categorized it and got real nerdy with it. And kind of figured out where is best that I spend my time. And frankly, it's best on, you know, kind of coming up with the vision and pushing that out. And really, I needed to be outbound, meeting with people and networking. And I hadn't been doing much of that because I felt like I needed to train. I felt like I needed to, you know, do all these pieces. And so once I started moving that stuff away, I've actually had a lot more joy. Frankly, that's probably even. You know, and I think it's been better for the team. So it was a great exercise. I'm glad we did it. I needed it.
All right. Who doesn't want more joy? I love that. That's great. Cause that's the thing. Like, we start businesses because we believe we're going to be happier, right? We're going to have more freedom, more flexibility, more, you know, control over income and all those things. And we imagine that it's going to be better. Everything's going to get better if we have our own business. But then the reality sometimes doesn't match up to that. You're working harder, longer hours. You know, you've got, sure, you have more potential to earn, but also you have more costs. And those, so you don't necessarily, you know, make more than you would if you're just a recruiter. So, I'm glad you've rediscovered the joy of that, Troy. Tell me then about, one more thing I want to say is that's a sure sign you have a great team is if they're coming to you and saying, hey, Troy, we've got this, or what can I do you know, to take stuff off your plate. And they're looking out for you, right? And rather than you having to push it to them, they're actually proactively wanting to take stuff and run with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. We have, and I tell people this, and it's not disingenuous. Like, I really believe that it's a unique, I've been doing this for a long time. I mean, it'll be 20 years in recruiting at the end of this year, with a little gap in between. But like, I've seen a lot of teams. I've been a part of them. I've led them. It's the most unique team I've had because, with the full trust, when somebody goes on vacation, now they may work a little bit, but like, the team covers for them, and it is let them really get away, kind of back to family, right? So we kind of have that DNA in everybody that we have that comes aboard, is that, you know, we are, yeah, it kind of compares to a sports team, not a family, because it's for our family, but we are really there to pick each other up.
And so tell me about the journey of hiring your first VA, and then, because you've now built a whole team, part of your team in the Philippines. So
that's right.
Yeah. So what has that enabled for you that has complemented your team in Dallas?
Yeah. So I've got, I have three VAs right now. And I can see that becoming more, but I think these three cornerstone pieces, I've got one doing recruiting or sourcing. I've got one doing business development, and I've got one doing marketing. There's other opportunities. And then, my first VA that I was sharing with you earlier, game changer for us. She's actually stepped into our offshore lead role. So she is actually, although some of the tasks and the project management she's helping organize, and help making sure that we're hitting the goals. And so by doing that, again, back to her, she was one of the ones that helped me onboard the marketing VA. Because I was on spring break, and she goes, "I've got this." And she'd only been with me for 3 months, and so couldn't do it without them. But it's, we had gone the route of VAs before through a third party, and it worked within certain parameters, but totally different when I decided to bring them on board and for them to be employees for Benchmark. And you know, just the buy-in and the vision and the understanding of the business and in the nuances has been right, really special.
Amazing. I think this is one of the mistakes that people try hiring offshore, and it's not that satisfactory, and it doesn't produce the results they were hoping for. But it's a different mindset. It's not like, oh, this is a freelancer who's going to be at arm's length, and they're going to do work for me. And it's, you know, it's much lower cost, and I'm just going to chuck stuff over to them and get them to take on certain tasks. But when you instead think of them as a team member, and they're fully integrated into your business, they work full time and exclusively for you, they communicate, like, you're not the bottleneck, but they can communicate with the rest of the team. They're on Slack or Teams with you, and you know, they really, you make them feel like they are genuinely part of the team, even though they're in a different country and a different time zone. I think that's when the real magic can happen. So what were some of the things that you initially identified that you could immediately get off your plate in order to, you know, allow you to concentrate on the stuff that you need to be doing, like being more out there networking, you know, business developing and so on?
So a lot of it comes down to things that I thought I needed to be in control of, accounting, invoicing, the flow of those things, just job ads. I mean, silly as that may be, even running team meetings. So I think I don't necessarily have to be the one to run the team meetings or to have so many meetings. I mean, I guess exciting news. Let's not bury the lead here. So I had this firm as my own for the first 6.5 years, and Tracy Dodd was just added to the partnership this week, and so it's massive, so exciting for the firm, for her, for us, and everything. And so she's taken about a third of the things off of my plate that frankly she's better at. She has got something that may take me a couple hours, she can get done in 20 minutes, and maybe it's because I didn't enjoy it as much, but I felt like I needed to do it. So really, we went through an exercise that was, what are you good at? What do you don't want to, you know, what are you good at, but don't want to do? What do you have to do, but don't want to, you know, aren't good at? And frankly, a lot of the things that I felt like I wasn't strong at, she's also a former accountant. So there's a lot of opportunities there. She's leading the team now directly. She's in it more than I am, both recruiting and, you know, she has the recruiting experience and the sales side. So they'll have more attention from her, more availability as well.
All right. Well, congratulations to Tracy. That's fantastic news. And congratulations to you as well. It really is. I've been on a similar journey myself, Trey, as you know, with Leanne, where she started as an employee, and that was the case for the first few years. And then just this past year, made her a partner in the business. And the thing is, she was already acting as though she was a partner. And it sounds like Tracy is the same sort of person that, right? Like, her job really hasn't changed because she was already thinking like an owner. She was thinking about the business, you know, when she wasn't working. She was bringing the level of commitment and, you know, passion to it that she would have if it had been her business. And so, yeah, it just made sense to make that official. So the exercise, by the way, if people want to replicate this, there's really three buckets. So what do you enjoy and you're good at?
That was what I missed.
Yep. Number two, what are you good at but you don't enjoy? And number three, what do you not enjoy and you're not good at? It's pretty obvious you should get rid of bucket number three right away. Like, get the tasks that you're doing in that category. But the one that's, and obviously the ones that are hard for people are, number one, if it's something you're good at, then it feels like maybe I should still keep doing this. But the thing is, you mentioned, like, Tracy is actually better at certain things than you. And that's the key, is you'll find that you want to concentrate on things you enjoy most and that you have the greatest impact at, and let other people do the things, you know, because we all have different strengths. Let other people take over those tasks that, yeah, maybe you're competent at, but they're going to bring a lot more energy to it than probably you're not prioritizing it. You're avoiding it. You're procrastinating, or you're doing it half-heartedly because you're just not, your heart's not in it. And then the things that you don't enjoy and you're not good at, reverse that. The things that you are good at and you enjoy, that's one that people often don't want to delegate. But the question is this the best and highest use of your time? Right? Because maybe there's somebody who would be even better than you at that. So that's a whole exercise that we recommend all our listeners really think that through if you want to free up time for scaling your business. So you've got Tracy on board now as a partner. You're growing your offshore team. Let's talk about the training, because I think that was the other, you said you had some false starts before when you tried to expand. Could you talk about why you think that didn't work and then what you've done differently this time to make sure that it is successful?
Yeah, I think this is really where I think we can spend a long time talking here, but really what it was, I've got, it's me, Brittany, Tracy for quite a long time. Brittany's been here for 2.5 years as well. What we would do is we would bring people in and we had kind of a 5-week training program where I would spend one-on-one time with them. Brittany would spend time on recruiting. Tracy would spend time on business development or vice versa. All these people had experience. So it wasn't like we felt like we needed to teach them how to recruit or what an accountant was. What we found, though, is the way we do things is different. And we weren't able to kind of uncover kind of the benchmark way in our training program until much later when we're starting to listen to calls and there's a few things, nuances that were off. But because it was all kind of ingrained in us, we didn't have a way for them to know the different messaging that we use, or that what we believe as far as what the market dynamics may be, or how to, you know, what we feel like the best way to coach a candidate or a client is. There was just nothing tangible. So if we would say it out loud, but if they didn't, they're not going to pick up on it one time. And so we just didn't allow them to go back to a real resource. You know, we had a 13-page document that had the bare bones. So like I said, some of it was on us. Some of it's still on the person, maybe ask more questions, but I have to take the ownership of, I didn't set them, some of them up for success. And we learned from it. So now we started using a project management software. We're using Asana, and I started using Asana just for the VAs. But what happened, they all had an onboarding document. So I was really critical to get onboarding documents for any new hire. They're going to have, you know, a roadmap. And I started doing that with them. And then it became really obvious that, okay, well, let's do that for the team. Let's expand upon this. So we've got, we basically took this Asana and have an entire onboarding for, depending on which person comes in. So if they come into recruiting only, they pop right into a training platform. That training platform is going to have documents, any document that they need, any, you know, reference forms, interview prompters, debrief forms, everything is there, and everything's branded now. So it's ours. It's not just some, you know, Word document put together. So they can get to that anywhere they want. My first VA, who's also the lead, she's also organized everything inside of Microsoft Office. So everything's chronological. Everybody can find it. Before, it was a little bit haphazard. People would not be able to find it as easily. So now everything's labeled and numbered and lettered and has kind of unique searchability there too, in case they're not finding Asana. And then the other thing we've done over the last several hires is every training that we do, even if they're in the office that day, we're recording it. And that allows people to go back and watch it again, or watch it for the first time, or slow it down, or take some notes. I found that to be really, really valuable. And so what we've done, we went through that with two people. So we've got a lot of data on training, and sometimes they're real scenarios. It's, I just had an objection, I couldn't overcome it. Or I've been trying this, what do you think? Let's role play. So the role plays are out there. And then about 6 months ago, we went through and basically put together all the steps that are in the process and what are we missing that we need to train on. And we will be finished with that if Tracy's got a couple left, I've got a few left, Brittany has one maybe left, and Charm has some. But our goal was to have it done by this Friday. And at that point, we will have a full, and then we'll add to it as things come up, right? And so anybody that comes on board now, we are so equipped to get them off and running. And they can, you know, we still have it lined out. Like, we want you to have this done in 2 weeks. But if they want to get it done faster, have at it. You have access to it as soon as you start.
Beautiful. I love this, Troy. This is, I know how much work goes into that. It sounds like you shared it among the team and everyone got involved. So that was smart. We tell all our clients, record everything. So record all your meetings, record your client and candidate calls, because all of that can be reused for training, or it can go into a platform like Asana, whether it's clips or, you know, sessions on specific topics, can all be organized into your training platform. And that stuff is gold, you know, because it's, as you say, it's real scenarios. And then, you know, with AI, you can get a lot of that stuff transcribed. And then that opens up all kinds of other possibilities in terms of things you're able to create with that content. And the other thing that I was thinking as you were talking about hiring top performers from other firms, I think this is a mistake a lot of owners make, is they assume if I bring in someone successful, they're not going to need training, right? Because they already know what they're doing, which is not the case. Everyone needs learning, development, coaching to constantly improve. But also, they grew up in a different culture and they're not going to be doing things the way necessarily you want them to be done. And so a lot of that stuff, you know, there's only one way to do it. And that's you have to almost retrain them in, you know, the benchmark way of doing things, right? So
well, can we double click on that a little bit too? So so we hired Matt, who's recruiter only. We're looking for one more 360 person with experience. But based on the organization structure we're creating, we're going to be training from ground up after that. So we will hire one more person with experience, but we are more prepared. So I wanted to hire top performers, but one of the other reasons was I wasn't equipped to teach. We like to hire accountants. So I wasn't equipped to really ramp them from ground up with what was going on. Now with kind of delegating some things, I've got more bandwidth, but with this training program, I feel like I can get just like I came up to speed. I didn't know anything. But they had a really good training program and had you know some extra resources. Well, now I feel like we could do the exact same thing. So after we get this next person hired, people after that are going to be coming in without recruiting experience, because then we can teach them our way and it's the only way that they've known. And I actually think they could possibly be successful faster doing it that way.
Yes, absolutely. There's no preconceived ideas, bad habits,
right,
or you know, they're just going to follow, you know, what you tell them. So there's definitely some huge advantages to doing that. Any other mistakes that you've identified along the way, which you've been able to then use as learning opportunities and improve what you guys are doing?
Oh, the mistakes. Why are we spending time on mistakes, Mark?
Well, you know, while you're thinking, there's a great book. I've got it behind me, called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday, who's a really good author. And it's kind of about stoicism, but it instead of reading like Marcus Aurelius or something, it's written for today. It's a lot more accessible and it uses more relevant, up-to-date examples. But the premise behind the book is that, you know, if you think about all of the quote unquote negative experiences, things that have happened to you that were unpleasant at the time or mistakes that you made, and then ask yourself the question, what benefit came out of that? Or how am I better off today for having gone through that? That, or what do I have in my life or in my business that would have never happened if we hadn't taken that fork in the road? And just by looking back and reframing things from that lens, it allows you to actually perceive it as a positive and something that has made you stronger.
So, and my team knows this about me, and I actually tell people this in the interview when I'm screening them the first time when I'm hiring. It's not a hiring problem. It's actually a firing problem. I have a tendency to believe in people, or kind of go back to my first time, right? Like I was almost fired. And so I give people a lot of chances. I believe in them. I believe they can do it. They're part of the team. We've invested a lot of time in them, but you know, they've got families and I want to make sure that we've done everything we can. But I'll be honest, and I realize this about me, but I also know that I have to at some point let it go, is that I oftentimes want it even more than my employee, if that makes sense. And so then I overinvest my time and then I become even more disappointed when they don't reciprocate. And so I say that because we didn't have a lot of true KPIs. I was kind of an anti-KPI guy coming from a big firm. I wanted people to manage their own, and we go through a scenario of managing their own ratios and what they can do. But what I found is I can tell them what they probably need to do, but if they're just never quite getting there, is it really going to happen? And so now I've started giving kind of weekly homework because I want to see if they can push the envelope just a little bit more. Because if I'm spending my time trying to help save their career here, then it may ultimately not be the right thing. So I think what the problem has been, I'm not perfect. I've not fixed it, but I do own the fact that I need to kind of have a clean break.
Yeah, this is a hard one, and you're not alone. Firing people that's like the worst thing about being a boss, right, and running a business. And it's there's no way around it. It's not pleasant. And because you have invested so much in people and you believe in them and you think that they do have the potential, otherwise you wouldn't have hired them in the first place, right? You saw something, and then it can be really hard to realize, oh, okay, maybe this, how they appear in an interview, that same passion or enthusiasm or commitment that I saw a glimpse of in the interview hasn't really transpired, in the actual job, or, they're falling short due to lack of effort, or whatever the case may be. That's a hard thing to reconcile.
You hit the nail on the head. If effort is there, I will train them all day. And that's really it. Because the more at-bats you have, it's hard to have at-bats in this career. If you're not getting enough people on the phone or sending enough emails or whatever it may, in-mails and all those things, then you just don't have a good enough sample size. So if the effort's there, that person will be here forever because we can get that person over the hurdle. The effort piece is the one that is no longer an option. I used to let that slide a little bit, and I can't anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right. To me, there's a couple of things. Number one is mindset and attitude, because that has to come from them, right? You can't train that per se. Do they have the right mindset and attitude? Number two, are they putting forth their full effort? Are they absolutely doing everything they can to make this work? And those two are really non-negotiable. Right. If they're not displaying those two things, then it's not going to work out. The third one is harder. Are they learning and improving? But I guess if you're hiring accountants, then that to some extent is an intelligence test already. So you've got that. But this is a tough job, and you do have to learn quickly. And sometimes I've seen, it doesn't happen very often, but I've seen some people hitting their KPIs, but they're not converting anything. And, there's another issue, which again is very hard to coach sometimes, but, that's a learn for sure. Have you come to any kind of, what's the word I want? Guidelines that are clearer as far as because I think the challenge is trying to take the emotion out of it and make it much more of a logical decision. What's the time frame that someone needs to start hitting their numbers?
Yeah, no, as part of that exercise, and Matt's the first one to go through it, it's been actually really, really great. So he had his first deal yesterday. He's been here for almost 2 months. So he was actually a week early in closing his deal, right? So we put together kind of minimum expectations on where things need to go. So it's outreach, it's internal screens, submittals to clients, even references, and it's on a week-to-week basis. And so there's a checklist, and are you hitting them and are you not? And so, but those are minimums. Those aren't goals, because you have to be able to do those, but you're probably going to have to do more. And so it scales up each week. And part of that is shadowing and doing some of those things with people on the team too. It's been really eye-opening and transparent, both for, I think, a new hire and for us, because it's an equalizer. And we talk about, okay, if you didn't hit it this week, well, you have to get to it somehow. So you've got to ratchet that up or you miss out, and how that activity is an accumulation over time, and you don't see the results or non-results for 4 to 6 weeks after. And so that kind of putting that on paper has been better than me just sharing and verbally and whiteboarding it. And so then after they've got about 4 weeks under their belt, we start talking about their ratios. Okay, here's what I said you need to hit. And this is what we know after 20 years of experience, we know this is what you have to hit to hit your goals. But based on your activity, you either have to do a lot more activity and here's your new activity number, or you got to convert more. Like, and so we go through those scenarios, and at some point there reaches a breaking point. I can't do any more activity. I have to learn. And tying to your point, if they're hitting their activity and not converting, where do we spend time, or is it just not going to work?
Fantastic. What, in your opinion, Troy, are the three most important metrics, and what's the minimum, or what's the ideal for someone to be successful?
So it depends. So we have full desk and we have recruiter only.
Yeah.
And then somebody could come in as BD only as well. But let's talk about recruiter only. Recruiters have to have at least 10 interviews screens.
Mm-hmm.
It probably needs to be more like 12, but you have to have 10 to keep it going. And then 6 client interviews in a week. You can get by with 3, but if you want to hit your metrics, we have a lot of high performers too. So, but if you can hit your 6 interviews with clients a week, you're going to end up with 3 to 4 placements a month. If you end up with 3 a week, you're going to end up with 1 to 2 placements a month. And so there's a scaling factor to that. And then on the client side, it's at least 2 meetings with clients every single week. And then that's going to be 5 to 8 also interviews a week.
Yeah. Wrapping things up, what is the vision going forward? What does the future hold for Benchmark?
Well, first of all, terribly exciting. We do a vision exercise. We've put that, and actually already kind of crushing our headcount goal. But we're looking to go. So we're 8 today, 13 by 2026. But what that really looks like for us is almost 3x revenue. And some of those can be VAs. And so what that does for us is it helps scale our current employees to do what they do best. And so with that 13 employees, 8 of them technically could be offshore.
When you say it helps you scale your employees in Dallas to do what they do best, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So remember, again, we have sourcing, business development rep, and marketing. So what they're able to do is they're able to help us spend more time on the phones with relevant people. They're yes. working on sourcing for us, both the job leads and the candidate leads. And then marketing is also helping them, basically create personal branding and, yes, Benchmark branding too, but also helping them with personal branding, which helps to bring
Love
in the
that.
Inbound leads. So we've got
yeah.
2 people working on external outbound leads and 1 person helping them work on inbound leads, which really, once we keep scaling that, people could really do 2x their production numbers without working more hours.
That is powerful, Troy. I think the beauty of that is, I mean, it's good for them, it's good for the business, and also good for attracting talent to come and work with you guys, right? Because that's a phenomenal platform you're building for people to, to be successful in recruitment.
Yeah, it's terribly exciting. And, we're early, but I can see so much fruit in even just the first 9 months of it. And it's terribly exciting.
All right. I love that. Troy, this was a lot of fun, and thank you so much for being on The Resilient Recruiter. Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out some of my other episodes. You'll see 1 or 2 suggested episodes on the screen now.